Yeah, hi, Danny.
Just to start off with, the biggest news that overshadowed all of transfer deadline day really had to be Guardiola coming to the Premier League. How much of a big moment is this for the Premier League?
Well, it was just as well Guardiola, the story did break, because it was a very boring transfer window.
Yeah.
It's a huge story for Manchester City. It's what their fans have been expecting. It allows them to sort of pay tribute to Manuel Pellegrini for the rest of the season and hope that he delivers some trophies, because he's been just such a, you know, dignified presence in the dugout. This charming man, as they sing and as they call him. But I think the fact that Pep Guardiola is coming to this country, I mean, he's clearly an upgrade on Pellegrini. He'll be, you know, he's the most coveted coach in world football, 2 Champions League, 19 major honours with Barcelona and Bayern Munich, obviously on top of a distinguished playing career. I mean, it's just, if you look at the Premier League at the moment, there are not too many stars there. The real stars are at Barcelona, Bayern Munich or Real Madrid. And now we have a bona fide coaching superstar, the number one in the world, coming to this country. And with luck, he might attract one or two of the star names from the continent to England.
That's something I wanted to pick up on you as well, because obviously he does have that brand now, and Manchester City's brand has increased. But how much do you think that he'll be able to pull in some of the big names from the likes of La Liga that have a pretty cushy way of living over there already?
I think if you're Lionel Messi and you've got a house near the beach in Barcelona and the sun shines for 300 days of the year, probably more, you're not playing every other day, as it almost seems in English football, with 4 competitions. If you go League Cup, FA Cup, Premier League and Europe as well. And if you want to do well in a tournament, because someone like Messi is one of the greatest footballers of all time, but he's not done it in a World Cup final. Okay, he got to a World Cup final with Argentina, but he's a little bit exhausted in the final. I think, you know, if he wants to be considered up with Pele and Maradona, he has to do in a World Cup. And it's very difficult with the English season, the intensity of it, the fact that every game is an ambush. But bottom can beat top. You know, it's, you don't get easy games or periods in games when you can just sort of ease up a little bit. So I'll be surprised if Messi comes to English football. I mean, I'll be the first one at sort of Heathrow, East Midlands or Leeds Bradford to sort of welcome him if he does arrive. But I think it will be the rung below that. But the fact is that it's Guardiola. I mean, players will want to play for him. I mean, he, just being as a humble journalist in his presence, I mean, he's just got this awe. You realise that you're in the presence of one of the most intelligent football minds that's ever existed. And for a player to be coached by him, to sit down, I mean, you saw the way he worked with Messi. There's some great footage of him one-on-one with Messi at the end of the game, really close to him, almost heads, foreheads touching, and he was just sort of giving him advice, giving him encouragement. So I think, you know, he makes exceptional players world-class, and I think if there's some good players who are going to go and work with him, he'll make them even better.
And looking at the Manchester rivalry that's there between those two teams, Manchester United, in this downfall that seems to keep on going, especially with the brand and the style of football, do you think that Manchester City is starting to maybe take the lead now in with Guardiola coming to the club?
If you talk to the Premier League and you'll say, just to broaden the conversation, you just say, what will it mean to you and your brand, that horrible word, if Leicester City win the title? They go, well, look, it's great, and it provides a little bit of sort of contrast to what normally happens. But the most important clubs in terms of interest around the world, the two who are ahead are Manchester United, followed by Liverpool. That's a reflection on their history. That's a reflection on their, you know, their trophy gathering over the years, and the fact also they're playing red, which is fairly important in the Asian markets. So you then move on to Manchester City. Will they become, and I hate the word brand, particularly with a club like Manchester City, where, you know, it's only 15, 16 years ago, they were playing against Macclesfield Town in League Two. And a lot of their fans remember those days. You know, they always sing, you know, we're not really here and all that. And, you know, they are genuine, proper, inverted commas supporters who've been through some difficult times. So, you know, in a way, this is for them. This is a reward for their persistence. And so although some people are perceiving Manchester City to be new money Revis, you know, they've paid their dues. They've done some long away trips to not particularly beautiful venues, and now they've got this. I mean, I've been to the ground today, and it is phenomenal. The you know, particularly with the new stands that they've developed, and now they're getting a coach commensurate with their ambitions. And what they want is, they want a Champions League title. and Guardiola, nothing can guarantee success, but Guardiola will take you a long way down that road because of his intensity and his experience.
I mean, what did you make of the overall timing? Because it did shock quite a lot of people. And I suppose, at the end of the day, Pellegrini's not done himself any harm. He'll be leaving, winning a trophy. He'll probably go on to another job somewhere else. Not done him any harm there. But the general timing of doing it sort of halfway through a season seemed quite strange to me.
Yeah, but in a way, you know, we also, as a journalist, I always look for the sort of the conspiracy and I'm always suspicious. But actually, maybe they just thought, well, at some point this story is going to come out. Why don't we just see if we can handle it in a dignified, open way rather than the undignified, opaque way, which is football's usual default approach. And actually say, right, people are kind of expecting that Guardiola is going to come. And he's already said that he's coming to the Premier League. So why don't we allow our manager, who we respect, to actually mention it at the end of a press conference? And effectively what happened was that the journalists who were in the press conference had received, while they were in there, received either emails or texts from Manchester City saying, by the way, asking about his future, which is normally they would do anyway. And Pellegrini was sort of getting up to leave because it was quite a low-key press conference. And he was just about to walk out, and he said, oh, by the way, that, you know, I just want to clarify my future. And I thought it was a nice sort of low-key, organic way of doing it. Just in his press conference, he'd been asked about any injuries before the Sunderland game, and he just said, oh, by the way, I'm off in the summer. The club haven't gone behind my back. I've known for sort of 4 or 5 weeks. And then the club came out with a statement immediately on the back of it. So, look, there are no perfect ways to do these things, but I thought Manchester City handled it in a pretty dignified fashion, which was a contrast, as most people in the room will have remembered, to how Mark Hughes discovered that he was going in, that Roberto Mancini was going in, and the bat and the handing over was pretty ugly.
And looking at the transfer window now, I mean, I was quite shocked by the fact that the big four didn't have many movements, and especially Manchester United not bringing anyone in. Is there something to read between the lines there that maybe Louis van Gaal isn't trusted to bring in any more players or anything like that?
Well, that's still a big gamble to make, because if they're saying, well, we'll make a decision on Van Gaal at the end of the season, you want to finish that season in the Champions League positions because it makes it a more attractive proposition for a stellar coach to come in. I don't understand that logic. I mean, it must have been his decision that he didn't really want to go out and buy. I'm not a fan of the Glazers, but I don't understand why they or Woodward would have said, right, we're not doing any business now. I think Van Gaal is slightly the type of coach who sees himself at so high at the top of the range, and he feels that buying or bringing in players in January is almost a slight sort of admission of defeat. You didn't get your squad right at the start of the season. But again, you know, they've been hit by injuries, particularly defensively, so I was surprised they didn't bring at least a left back in. One thing that surprised me totally with all the top teams is that no one took a punt on Charlie Austin. Mm. Now, there are always questions about his injury record, and he missed Southampton's game last night. But as Manchester United found out to their cost, this is a very intelligent mover in the box, makes incredibly clever runs, and he finishes. And, you know, that's what a lot of the teams are crying out for, like Arsenal. Arsenal could have done with a Charlie Austin because he actually makes more intelligent runs in the box than Giroud. So I was very surprised the top teams didn't go for more. I mean, I was at Leicester last night. So, you know, we consider Leicester a top team now, certainly in terms of their position in the table. And they didn't go crazy in the transfer room. But, I mean, they kept Vardy, they kept Mahrez, they kept Kante, they kept Schmeichel, and they brought in Gray. So, you know, they've got an option there. But, look, you could see this was the January of fear. These were the clubs like Bournemouth and Newcastle United and Norwich who were going out and investing in players to keep them up. And the fact that Aston Villa didn't invest, or the board didn't let Remy Gard invest, was basically just the white flag being raised over Villa Park, and also the manager sort of saying that he was going to consider his future in the summer because the club hadn't invested now. So they are very much the first dead man walking.
Yeah, I couldn't quite believe that myself. And looking at this transfer window now, Henry, is, you know, Norwich spending more in the window than Ligue 1, and Stoke spending £18 million on one player. I mean, is it a good or a bad thing that these kind of teams could be spending this kind of money now?
Well, I quite like it, the fact that English football is financial powerhouse. I wish it become a footballing powerhouse in terms of doing better in Europe. Mm. I do think it's slightly undignified going out and spending substantial sums on the last day of the season. It's not really the best way to run a business. But you look at what Mark Hughes has done at Stoke City in terms of developing them as a team and in terms of, you know, their style. I think it was good. But I come back to sort of just a particular grief stroke concern of mine that clubs don't look within. They don't look at their academies. They are investing £2-4 million a year to run an academy. They've invested substantial sums just to get the kids in there in the first place. I mean, 8-year-old kids are going effectively for transfer fees at the moment. So the clubs are harvesting these kids and putting them in their academies, developing them, spending money on them year after year, wages, coaching, accommodation, refueling, everything, putting fuel in their nice cars. And then what happens when they get to 17, 18? A player comes in from overseas. Now, when the very best players come in from overseas, I think that's fantastic. But when Pato comes, I know he's only 26. I know he's got to gain his fitness. And I know there is a lot of technical ability in him. But I don't quite see what he brings to the Premier League when a Dominic Solanke could have been recalled from loan and given a chance by Chelsea. So it is irritating that the default mechanism of every club is to go out and buy rather than to look in their academies. Because, you know, we've got all these kids. What do we do with them? We've got to give them a chance at some point.
Mm, that's very true. And talking about a team that brings through a lot in their academy, and something I have to pick up on here, and is Leeds United. Now, I know you've written a lot about them in the past. I know you keep a close eye on them. A team that didn't bring in a striker through January, which is something that a lot of people said that they very, very much needed. I mean, what do you make of Leeds United's current situation at the moment?
Well, I went in to see Steve Evans the other day because I've known him for a while, and I went into the sort of canteen at Thorpe Arch and he introduced me to one or two of the younger kids. And I looked round and, you know, Leeds United have got some good kids. You know, I mean, it's unfortunate Sam Byron. I mean, look at Sam Byron. Sam Byron goes to West Ham and he just looks a natural, Premier League natural on the pitch. And you suddenly think, well, actually, because they've got more money for him. And you just think that must be so frustrating for the fans, for the other players and for Steve Evans, who is basically, Leeds United are confirmed as a selling club. Whereas you look at the power of you look at the history, you look at the ground, there's always a particular atmosphere of one club cities. You know, Leeds shouldn't be selling the family silver like that, and certainly not so cheaply. So I think it's a huge frustration. I don't understand what's happened at Leeds United, because if you're a wealthy individual, whether you're a Russian oligarch, American, owner of a baseball club, and you want to get into English football, I understand the North-South divide, which all potential owners talk about. But Leeds United, there's something, I don't know whether it's something wrong with the books, whether it's something wrong in the system, but people go in and have a look, and then good people, and they walk away. Now, Massimo Cellino is quite a charismatic individual. He obviously loves his football, but he needs to invest more. He also needs to engage more with the fans. He also needs to leave managers alone, which he, to be fair, he seems to with Steve Evans. Steve Evans is a tough character. Steve Evans and Cellino sort of have dinner on a regular basis. And I get the impression that, you know, Cellino quite likes Steve Evans. Is, you know, he's got a lot of, not pizzazz, but he's got a lot of character, a lot of resilience. I mean, this man, well, Leeds fans know he turned up in a sombrero when Rotherham had stayed up. Mm. So maybe that sort of, you know, professional relationship can work. But clearly what Steve needs is money invested in the squad. Because Leeds United are a Premier League club in exile and they need to get back up there. But unless they invest, they're just going to bobble along for the next few years between positions 10 and 14 in the Championship.
Well, Andrew, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. I could talk to you all night, but I know you're a very busy man. Thanks a lot for joining us here on The Press Room.
My pleasure. Take care.